Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
In a normal year, the eating disorder clinic in St. Vincent's Hospital in Dublin would expect to treat around 45 patients. Last year, that number rose to 58. And last month alone, 24 patients with eating disorders presented for treatment. Now, Dr. Caroline Maher, who is a consultant psychiatrist there, is on the line to shed some light as to why these numbers are increasing. Dr. Maher, good morning.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for doing this. First of all, I know you're very busy.
No problem.
Those numbers are troubling. Are you seeing more and more young people?
Yeah, and I think that's what the real issue is, that teenagers and young adults are being particularly affected. So there's, the thing is, it's not just that the young people are being affected, but there's a significantly higher number of people presenting with more severe illness and in need of acute medical treatment. So that means like medical admission, specialist eating disorder admission and treatment in the emergency departments throughout the country. So I think it's really important to say too that it's not just really thin people who can be severely unwell with an eating disorder, and the higher numbers include a higher proportion of people who are not particularly underweight, but they've lost a large amount of weight in a short space of time, and the body kind of goes into a starved mode, and that can be medically dangerous and is actually in need of urgent medical attention. So their body isn't able to release enough energy to keep their brain and body functioning, and then they might experience sort of energy levels dropping, dizziness, weakness. And it can be a real problem because medical staff who aren't trained in eating disorders can underestimate the severity of the illness because they're basically, you know, they think that their weight is fine. So it has been a really significant issue.
Yeah. You believe social media is a big factor here. Why did you say that, or what's going on there?
Possibly got exaggerated, but there is no question. I mean, I suppose there's different reasons. The COVID, I think, was very frightening and stressful for people, and it interrupted everybody's normal routines. But for people with vulnerability to developing an eating disorder, certain things were triggering. And teenagers and young adults really rely on their friend group for social interaction and support. And during lockdown, that was frankly mainly online and with social media. So some of the young people that we've seen have mentioned the effect that social media had on them. So there was this belief that we'll all put weight on in lockdown, and those attending our services said that their eating disorder began, or that their, you know, that the eating disorder that they had sort of deteriorated. So I think what happens is that people begin to focus on threads of social media that are about weight loss and exercise and dieting, and also social influences sort of promote a particular body shape which A, has usually been airbrushed or altered to make it look smaller, and B, doesn't match anything that the vast majority of people's shape is. So people feel a failure if they can't meet this.
We had a phone call into the show from a caller whose daughter is attending a clinic in the UK due to a lack of beds in Ireland. Can you answer why there aren't enough specialists in this area?
Okay, so I mean, basically, we've a history of a lack of services in this country. Now, it's partly due to the fact that eating disorders are a hidden disease that people are either too ashamed to tell somebody about, or they genuinely don't realise they're that unwell until it becomes blatantly obvious. So the National Clinical Programme for Eating Disorders was launched here in January 2018 with a plan to roll out, you know, inpatient, daypatient, outpatient treatment throughout the whole country. But due to an overall lack of mental health spending, not just for eating disorders, and a lack of understanding of how damaging eating disorders are, the money wasn't released. So what we really need now is a commitment to develop these services, because the high numbers, as you quite rightly point out, are what we're going to have is severely ill young people who will be chronically affected if they don't receive the right treatment at the right time.
So tell me, generally speaking, about the patients you're seeing at the moment, just to give us an idea.
Yeah, so the people that I will see, so I mean, eating disorders are all about trying to cope with distress and control anxiety. And the act of losing weight gives the person a feeling of being in control. And initially, other people will give them positive comments about this. But the thoughts and the behaviours of planning the weight loss can also distract the person from their worries. And the other behaviours, which we call compensatory weight loss behaviours, are like high exercise levels, vomiting, taking laxatives and maybe diet pills, and drinking excess fluids, and all of those things. The thoughts and the behaviours just become completely overwhelming until the person feels trapped and they can't focus on anything else. So it's totally all-consuming.
And do they present themselves, or are the majority taken in by family?
I think it was interesting last year in that the Child and Adolescent Services showed a much bigger increase than we did last year. And I think that's because adults, obviously, that for parents notice, whereas, if you're an adult, you have to present yourself. And as I've said, many people don't even realise that they've got a problem until something significant happens, that literally they end up in an emergency department because they've collapsed. Or somebody has said to them, you know, this is ridiculous. Usually family, that, you know, this is awful. You can't continue like this. But because they're adults, you know, people will do their own thing. And it's quite difficult sometimes to even persuade people to come into hospital.
And what happens once they go into the care of Vincent's?
So once they go into the care of Vincent's, obviously, we're very lucky. We've got specialised eating disorder beds. So they'll come into the hospital. The focus will be initially on very much stabilising their medical condition. And they'll be managed with the nursing staff, dietitians. They'll be given help, I suppose, through the nursing staff, dietitians, psychology, and obviously, very importantly, medical and psychiatric treatment.
The fact that it's physical and a mental illness, let's talk about anorexia, for example, is it important to work on the, you said you work on the medical side first, is it important to work on the physical side of the person before you work on the mental health?
Yes, because often people are so starved that their brains have really shut down and they're not even able to process some of the things that you might want them to be able to do so if you're actually treating the disorder. So we're essentially trying to get them physically stable, so stabilising their glucose levels, making sure that their blood results are stable. And when you start feeding somebody who's not been eating for a long period of time, that has to be done very gently because otherwise it's too much of a shock to the system.
And how much, what's the average time someone would spend in Vincent's for an eating disorder? Can you give me a rough estimate?
It's usually, I suppose, between 10 and 12 weeks wouldn't be unusual.
Okay, wow. Wow. I'm getting a lot of texts into 51552 on this. A lot of worried people for our family and friends. Somebody texted me saying, do you think enough public services are available for under 18s in Ireland?
No, I think they're not. The National Clinical Programme, though, when it's properly rolled out, will have services for everybody, for both children, adolescents and adults.
Okay. Another texter says, what would be the best advice for the recovery of a person with anorexia, for example, for their parents?
Yeah. So there's a number of different things that parents can do or even people themselves or people that know somebody with an eating disorder. And for yourself, you can contact bodywise.ie and they're very helpful in that they actually run programs providing training and education for people who are involved in young people. So that's a sort of a primary care thing. But they'll also, they have a what's called the PLR support group. And they run online meetings, which is, it's not just a meetings, it's an education program for parents about how to best help someone who has an eating disorder in their family. And so literally just bodywise.ie.
They're really good.
The other thing that's helpful is downloading the HSE self-care eating disorder app. That's quite useful for someone who has an eating disorder or even someone who knows somebody with one, and that might give them useful advice as to how to speak to them. I think the important thing is to say to somebody, I'm really worried about you. I don't think that you're well.
Yeah, because a lot of texts coming in are questioning, do their friends or family have an eating disorder? For example, somebody says, my friend only eats vegetables. Is that an eating disorder? She claims it's just healthy.
Okay, well, I think the reality is if you're eating a really limited amount of foods, then yes, there is a problem with your eating. Now, I can't say I don't know this particular person, but I would worry that that's a very limited diet and you're not getting the carbohydrates, fats, proteins that are really crucial in our diet to make us healthy.
Another texter says, like other addictions, sometimes a buddy mentor system is good. Would that be something you would agree with?
I'm not quite sure what they mean by a buddy mentor system.
Let's say if they have an addiction to alcohol, they would have a mentor, someone who's been through it, that they would call if they're feeling down or whatever, something like that.
I think all of those things are incredibly helpful. I suppose to some extent Bodywise tries to provide some of that and probably does very successfully as well. But I think the important thing that needs to happen is somebody needs to be, they need to receive the treatment initially and those support systems then get put in place after they've had their actual acute treatment.
And when the person is in treatment in Vincent's, just for their families and stuff like that, what's important to remember is constant contact or just let them get on with it, or what's the approach there?
Well, we think families and loved ones are really important in treatment, because obviously they're the person you're going to, they're the people you're going to go back to, and they're the people who support you. So we would involve the parents and families very much in their treatment and meet with them regularly and make it, you know, clear what's helpful and what's not helpful. And sometimes that can be different for each different person.
Yeah. Really interesting. Yeah, somebody texts me saying, "Hi Jennifer, I had an eating disorder while I was a teen, and I feel the biggest misunderstanding was that people were doing this to look like some random model, that they do this because they want to look like an airbrushed picture. It's actually about control. Something else in their life is out of control, so they zone in on controlling weight and food. Absolute mental torture for yourself. Very strong feelings, difficult journey." Let's talk about that journey. It is a difficult one. Do you see much of a success rate from people who seek treatment in Vincent's?
Yeah, we do. I mean, I suppose, and that caller is absolutely right. Eating disorders are very much about trying to cope with stress and control anxiety. And the act of losing weight gives the person a feeling of being in control. But the other thing is that the thoughts and behaviours of planning weight loss distract people from their worries. So the whole package basically is something that makes them not have to worry about the things that are causing them distress. So yeah, we find that certainly 90% of our patients are treated as outpatients. The significant majority of them will improve. Many of them, of that majority, will actually go on to not have an eating disorder anymore. I suppose a lot of the research will show that because eating disorders are so serious, 10 to 20% of people will continue to be affected for the rest of their lives. Mm. But what the research really shows is that early treatment is very important. And I think this is why the clinical programs are so important, because if you get the illness early, you have a much better chance of completely getting rid of it.
Can you tell me the youngest person you have seeking treatment at the moment in there?
Well, you see, the thing is, we only see adults. So our patients are 18 plus.
18.
But the child and adolescent services are definitely seeing people down as young as 10 and possibly even younger.
Oh, my God. So what can we do if we suspect someone has an eating disorder? And we're not just talking about anorexia, because we talk about eating disorders.
No.
I just got a text saying people assume anyone with an eating disorder is anorexic. But I was treated last year for the opposite. I piled on 8 stone from binges.
Absolutely. And in fact, binge eating disorder would be the most common. Bulimia nervosa is probably the next most common, and anorexia is the least common.
Yeah.
Although obviously, so you're absolutely right. That's really significant that we don't and we don't obviously. I mean, you know, all types of people with an eating disorder are referred to our service.
I suppose as a parent or a family member, language and looking at how we speak to these people. It is very important. Have you any tips?
Yeah, I mean, communication is a real core, isn't it? It's trying to listen to what the other person is saying, and also to say, "I'm really worried about you. You know, you don't seem well to me." And then try and allow the other person to say what it is that is causing them the distress and the problem. But I think to keep echoing that message continually and saying, "Look, you know, come to the GP with me. At least discuss it with that. You know, you don't think you've got a problem, so then the GP will say everything's fine." So I think to just keep at it is really important. I think none of us are great about personal comments being made about our person, whether it's to do with our weight or what we look like. I think it's always really good to try and avoid that sort of thing. And sometimes when someone's being treated for an eating disorder and they restore a bit of weight, and people, family, friends say, "Oh, you're looking brilliant." But someone who has an eating disorder will often perceive that as being, "Oh, okay, you're looking fat." We have to be a little bit careful about what we say.
And do you think people, you know, family and friends need education themselves as to how to speak to...
And we would do some of that also in our program, obviously, but also the PLR program, as I said, that Bodywise runs out is incredibly helpful with that.
Bodywise, you've mentioned them a few times, and they're absolutely amazing. Caroline, thank you so much. That is Caroline Maher. I just want to thank her for her time today. You can visit stvincents.ie for more info there. We've mentioned Bodywise now 4 times. It is a great resource to have. Unfortunately, I think it's the main one to go to. I wish there were more, but Bodywise.ie. Big reaction to this. Huge. I mean, the numbers are frightening as it is. And we all need to be very much aware of it. You can keep your text coming into me, 51552. You can call me 1850 715 922. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.